This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If this pandemic continues to hit health systems, disrupt those routine services, disrupt access to salaries and income and food. So they're pretty grave numbers, and I don't think anyone was expecting that children yet again would be, you know, some of the hardest hit with this crisis.
That's James Elder, the UNICEF spokesperson for Eastern and Southern Africa, on the impact of the coronavirus on children if it is not brought under control. Details coming up also. Many countries are slowly ending lockdowns aimed at stopping the rapid spread of COVID-19. And a second wave of desert locusts is posing a serious threat to food security in Kenya. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, warns an additional 6,000 children could die every day from preventable causes over the next 6 months as the COVID-19 pandemic weakens health systems and disrupts routine services. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
New research says, based on the worst of three scenarios, in 118 lower and middle income countries, an additional 1.2 million children under five could die in just 6 months. They are at risk because of reduction in routine health service coverage levels and an increase in food insecurity. The estimate is based on research from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in the United States, newly published in the Lancet Global Health Journal. The research says 556,700 more maternal deaths could also occur in 6 months. That would add to 144,000 maternal deaths that already take place in the same countries over a 6 month period. James Elder is a UNICEF spokesperson for Eastern and Southern Africa. He says children are at risk because the coronavirus pandemic is disrupting routine healthcare services, overstretching healthcare facilities, and hampering the immunization campaigns and support services that millions of children and mothers need every day. He says children are not necessarily being infected with COVID-19, but rather they are being affected by the secondary impacts.
If this pandemic continues to hit health systems, disrupt those routine services, disrupt access to salaries and income and food, so they're pretty grave numbers, and I don't think anyone was expecting that children yet again would be, you know, some of the hardest hit with this crisis.
Elder says for half a century, there have been significant progress in reducing child mortality worldwide, but for the first time, that success is under threat.
This is the first time that if health systems are stretched, if mums can't get into into hospitals, if we can't get those drugs, if people can't get transportation because of lockdowns and curfews or facilities are closed, this is the first time that we risk an increase in child mortality under five deaths globally.
Elder says in Eastern and Southern Africa, Ethiopia, Uganda, and Tanzania could see the worst outcomes, with an additional 6,000 children dying every day from preventable causes over the next 6 months as COVID-19 pandemic weakens health systems. In sub-Saharan Africa, he says, the worst case scenario would be that 9 out of 10 countries would face losses like that. He called on governments to urgently institute measures to protect the vulnerable and children. Elder says UNICEF is launching its reimagining campaign, a global campaign to prevent the COVID-19 pandemic from becoming a lasting crisis for children, especially the most vulnerable, those affected by poverty and family violence.
To reimagine a world that's currently besieged by this virus. So the reimagine campaign really is calling on any type of supporter, individual supporter, the private sector, ambassadors, the big donors, to help raise funds so we can combat the stresses on health system, find new ways of making sure that the poorest kids can be online. All the things that are currently affecting kids, so many of them secondary impacts, they do require funding.
Elder Mother says UNICEF is deeply alarmed by the other lock-on effects of the pandemic on children. For instance, more than 117 million children in 37 countries may have missed out on their measles vaccination because immunization campaigns have stalled to reduce the risk of spreading the virus. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Many countries are slowly ending lockdowns aimed at stopping rapid spread of COVID-19, but scientists agree that a return to normality is impossible without a vaccine. Experts around the globe are working on this. In Africa, South Africa is among the leaders, but the project generating the most interest and optimism is at Oxford University in the United Kingdom. Darren Taylor reports.
Researchers there began working on a COVID-19 vaccine in February. Human trials started a few weeks ago. The scientists say if these are successful, an effective immunization could be available within a few months. Two South African epidemiologists, the husband and wife team of Salim and Karesha Abdul Karim, are also involved in studies to develop a vaccine. They commend the Oxford group's work, but say the optimism around the project could be premature.
So you can isolate something in preclinical studies that is very promising, but it has to go through multiple stages before you can say you have a safe and effective product, whether it's a vaccine or whether it's treatments.
The British scientists have been quoted as saying the objective is to produce 1 million doses of vaccine by September. Karesha is skeptical.
That's the sort of thing of where someone can announce maybe sometimes too quickly that they have something, but we don't know whether it actually is safe and whether it actually works. You've got to do the clinical testing before you have that answer. But the clinical testing is something that takes time.
Salim says that will take at least 18 months and probably longer. He says the urgency of the coronavirus pandemic is pushing medical researchers into uncharted territory, with some working at breakneck speed. Salim explains that when scientists give a potential vaccine to a trial subject, they must wait up to several months for the antibody response required to proceed further.
Then those individuals that have been vaccinated, we have to wait for them to get exposed to the virus and then to see whether they get infected or not.
A control group of people who are given a placebo vaccination that has no pharmacological effect is also needed.
Then we compare the number of new infections in the placebo group and in the group that got the vaccine. All of that takes months to get. It's not something that just happens overnight. So you can anticipate a study like that will take about a year.
Salim says only if a very large proportion of the Oxford study's participants are exposed to the virus very fast will scientists get some sort of an indication whether the drug works or not in the near future. But he adds that's not good enough.
They still have to follow them up because we have to know that this vaccine is safe. We can't go around giving it to people and then realize a year later it causes all kinds of medical problems.
Multinational medical experts echo the South African team's doubts. Even the latest reports emerging from Oxford indicate their project is highly ambitious. But as Salim says, if ever there's a time in history to aim for the impossible, it's now. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
With Kenya stepping up operations to control swarms of desert locusts in the country's center and north, experts are warning that a second wave of the harmful pests is likely to pose a serious threat to food security. From Kenya's central town of Isiolo, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
In a farming village in Laikipia County, George Kanyi is inspecting his farm, which was recently invaded by locusts. He worries about a second wave of the insect plague.
Kama nyanya nilikuwa nimepanda eka 10, sasa yote ilipotelea chini. Viazi nilikuwa nimelima eka 3, ambazo nilikuwa nimetumia kama 150,000, lakini yote ilikuliwa ikaisha kabisa.
I had grown tomatoes on a 10 acre piece of land, but now all that has gone to waste. I had also grown 3 acres of potatoes, and that also went to waste. But we are on the onset of the long rains in Laikipia, so the crops that were destroyed have started to rejuvenate. We are concerned because we hear that the locust will strike again, and if they strike again, we shall be completely devastated, for we will have nothing left.
Tuko na hofu kubwa sana sababu hizo nzige tunasikia zinaweza rudi, na zikirudi sasa sisi tutakuwa tumeisha kabisa.
Laikipia in central Kenya and northern frontier regions are among the areas worst affected by locusts. Tiambati Leletit is a pastoralist from Mugur village in Samburu County.
Imemaliza mfugo yangu, so nimebagiwa na mbusine, na imemaliza tena ile shamba nililima.
I've lost almost the whole flock of my goats. Out of 84 goats, only 4 are remaining now. I tried farming, but the locusts came back and destroyed all the crops in my farm.
Nikafikiria kulima. Sasa locusts ikakuja kumaliza tena hiyo chakula. Wameharibu tu kila kitu.
Leletit village, 400 kilometers northeast of the capital Nairobi, is predominantly semi-arid, mainly occupied by the semi-nomadic Samburu pastoralists. Like many pastoralist communities in East Africa, they take great pride in their livestock. The animals' blood, milk, and meat make their main diet. Another pastoralist, Moses Lomoria, says the locust infestation is a crisis on top of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has limited the anti-locust fight. When the locusts invaded this area, they destroyed everything. These locusts have been all over this place. It's only until recently when they got sprayed that they started dying. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says locusts have destroyed some 70,000 hectares of vegetation in more than 20 counties in Kenya. A government-backed initiative to fight them with the FAO's technical assistance is underway, spraying pesticides on thousands of hectares. A recent UN report warned of possible widespread destruction of crops and pastures by locusts in the coming months. And destruction of pastures may trigger ethnic conflict among local pastoralists and farming communities. Josephine Ekiru is a peace negotiator from the Northern Rangelands Trust.
During dry seasons, our communities, pastoral communities, move towards where there is pasture. There is that enmity between these communities, pastoralist communities. So if this locust invasion brings the certification of that issue of no grass or pasture, I think it will increase resource-based conflict.
Widespread locust breeding is in progress, and new swarms are starting to lay eggs. Some say the impact will be dire on families and children, as communities also grapple with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Isiolo, Kenya.
11 survivors from a tragedy in which 64 Ethiopian migrants suffocated to death in a truck in Mozambique will return to their homes today. Simon Marks reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
When 18-year-old Dijene Degefa left his rural dwelling in Bishoftu, 50 kilometers south of Addis Ababa, he thought his journey would lead to a job in South Africa, remittances for his family back home, and a break from unemployment. Instead, it almost cost his life. Dijene is one of 14 young Ethiopian men who narrowly escaped death from a nearly airless cargo truck in Mozambique on March 24. Another 64 undocumented migrants from Ethiopia died in the truck, which was operated by human smugglers who are still at large. Dijene told VOA he had paid brokers 200,000 birr, or $5,500, to reach South Africa. Before arriving in Mozambique, he had already travelled for more than 6 months, he said, sometimes on foot through thick forest and without food and water. Now, he told VOA in an interview, he will return home, his only prospect being to pick up some work as a farmhand. Still, he appreciates being back home. 11 of the victims will return to their homes on Friday after spending 2 weeks in a COVID-19 quarantine center based in Addis Ababa. The three other survivors ran away after receiving hospital treatment in Mozambique, officials from the UN's International Organization for Migration said. The 78 young men, who took the journey from Ethiopia, had traveled 4,000 kilometers south of Addis Ababa on foot and in trucks before arriving in the city of Tete, Mozambique. It was there, at a checkpoint, that they started to run out of oxygen in the truck and began banging the sides for help. Mulugeta Erdolo, 19, told VOA he was unconscious when he was lifted from the truck by Mozambican authorities. Authorities in Ethiopia and Mozambique are conducting a joint investigation into the incident, said Sarah Basha, program coordinator for the International Organization for Migration in Ethiopia. Numerous calls to Ethiopia's federal police force went unanswered. Basha said that most migrants who leave Ethiopia are between 15 and 35 years old and end up leaving their homes due to a lack of economic opportunities at home. She also said that while authorities are working closer together to clamp down on trafficking networks, there is still a massive amount of work left to do.
The network is huge. It's beyond Ethiopia. There are a lot of smugglers along the journey. So that kind of government-to-government cooperation is extremely important. Strengthening borders, strengthening even the law in the country that allows you to prosecute, strengthening the capacity to investigate, providing witness protection, because we have come across returnees that are afraid to testify.
Basha said shutting down the smugglers is made harder by the fact that many Ethiopians lack economic opportunities in a growing country where the population already stands at about 110 million. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The social distancing and restrictions on gatherings to fight COVID-19 meant ending Algeria's year-old popular uprising. Legal experts and activists decided to boycott discussions of a draft constitution, accusing the government of using an inappropriate environment to quickly pass the document, which reflects no change in the nature of the political system. The popular uprising that began in February 2019 demanded a new political structure with less power for the president and a real democratic system. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, on whether the timing of the draft was an exploitation of the lockdown or a genuine response to the popular uprising.
It was a poor response and not a genuine one because it didn't address the core demands of the Harak movement or Algerian society in general. The changes that were made in the new draft were cosmetic because they did not get at the core demands, which were systemic change, elimination of corruption, and the change of the way in which the society is governed. It did, in some ways, just get back to the status quo ante before the Bouteflika presidency, the Zitouel constitution, President Zitouel of 1996, particularly on going back to two presidential terms, but didn't address the core demands. It did take advantage of the pandemic, but that is masking a more serious reality, which is that the Algerian government has used the COVID-19 pandemic to crack down on journalists, bloggers, media activists, and other leaders of the Harak movement in a very sort of cynical way. So while they're proposing protections of freedom of speech through the new constitution, they're cracking down on freedom of speech. And this is exactly the type of cynicism which is turning off a lot of Algerians.
The new draft suggests creation of the position of a vice president, but Algerian activists said this position does not fit the current political system. Why is that?
Because the vice president is not elected. So think about this. You could elect a president, they could fall ill, and then appoint the vice president to take their position, and they could serve, that person could serve the entire term of the president unelected. The whole point of the Harak movement was to move towards greater democracy. But the fact that an unelected vice president can serve the entire term of the president and never face an election goes in the opposite direction of what most Algerians want. Also, there's a big problem that the new constitutional draft doesn't address, which is the nature of the system. Most Algerians want less of a hybrid system between presidential and parliamentary power, and they want to reduce the presidential role and to give much more power to the parliament. This actually increases the power of the presidency rather than reducing it. So it goes in the opposite direction of what most Algerians want.
The popular uprising that swept Algerian cities since February 2019 demanded a new political structure with less powers for the president and a real democratic system. What's missing in the new draft to fulfill such demands?
What's missing is greater systemic change. So the new proposal, there's 73 different proposals that they've put forward that might reduce the presidential power, if it's enacted the way it says, by about 10%. That's not real democratic reform. In real democracy, the people control the government. The government is transparent in its operations and accountable to the people, and there's an independent judiciary that keeps the other branches of government honest. None of that's happening under these proposals because the people don't have more control. The executive power doesn't have to be more transparent, and there's very little to push the judiciary in the direction of greater independence from the other branches of government. Now, they did address some issues in an interesting way. It would reduce the number of terms not only the president could have, but also the members of parliament could have. It would eliminate the way in which the president picks one-third of the upper chamber of parliament, but it doesn't address the core issues of how the system works in Algeria in a way that offers to both the Harak movement and the Algerian people the change of the oligopolistic system, reduction of corruption, and other ways in which less power would be concentrated in the hand of a single individual or a small group of people and transferred to the people in general in Algeria. This type of cosmetic change is likely just to continue to extend the current boycotts. As you know, most Algerians boycotted the December elections. They're boycotting the constitutional decision, and there's nothing in here that's going to reverse the current boycotts supported by most Algerians.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy speaking with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09.05 and 20.05 UTC right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.